On Pilot TV this week, we're settling in for some Scandi crime drama with Jo Nesbø's Detective Hula on Netflix. Back in the movie industry metaverse with Riz Ahmed in Bait on Prime Video. And finally, getting to watch The Pit outside of a plane as HBO Max makes its triumphant UK debut, bringing this medical marvel with it. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And sitting across from the mic are the beatific faces of my two co-pilots, Steph Seelan, editor of If You Can't Do the Time, Don't Do the Crime magazine, and Boyd Hilton, TV's Boyd Hilton, no less. How are you, Boydie?
I'm all right, thanks. How
Any
are you?
Surprise interviews this week that I don't know about that you'd like to announce on the show?
No, I did do Hugh and Hugh from 2026 on Friday.
Well, that's good to know. Which,
yeah, I'll
good.
Get you the audio of that.
Checks calendar. Nope, yeah. Nothing.
No, it is on the calendar.
Is it?
Yes. It's because it's going out on April, beginning of April.
Okay. On air check, please.
Yeah.
All right.
So fine. I think I actually did put it, unless I completely fantasised.
No. I'm looking now. It does appear that you have entered this onto the calendar.
We are having a terrible time of accusing Boyd of being wrong. No, I believed you. I didn't doubt you for a second.
Thank you. So that is an absolute triumph.
Well done, you.
What more could anyone want?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. How am I, James?
Yes, how are you, Steph? How are you?
I'm absolutely...
That's what I want to know.
Tickety-boo. How are you, James?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, tickety-boo. That's making a comeback, I'm saying.
Is it?
Yeah.
You're bringing it back?
I'm bringing it back.
Okay, good. Should we segue straight into what we've been watching this week? Not beat around the bush, get right into it.
Let's give the people what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah? Are you going to start with me?
I am.
Okay, I've got quite a long list.
Oh, God.
I know. No! Okay.
That was a very big no. No.
Okay. So
it's usually me that has the very long list. So this is refreshing.
You know what? I'll tell you what it is. I took it upon myself after I listened back to, as you know, sometimes
don't
I like to.
Back.
I listen back.
You're
I do.
Mad.
Yeah,
how
but
can
some,
you listen back.
You know, in the pursuit of like improvement and you know.
God, okay.
Anyway,
it's professionalism, boy.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I felt bad about really like writing off starting again things. I thought, no, Steph, you can't.
So you've watched the whole of The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead?
No. Do you know what I've started? Paradise.
Have you?
And it's fan-bloody-tastic.
It is, isn't it?
Well, let's just say, okay, the opening scene with Sterling K. Brown really drew me in because obviously he just, like, he's in bed. Tick. Then he gets undressed. Tick, tick. He's sculpted. He looks great. And also he's a protector. It's like, whoa, this is great. James Marsden. Tick, tick. Fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant. I'm really, really enjoying it.
Yeah, it's loads of fun.
It's great.
Loads of fun.
It's really good. So I'm now parking my ban on starting again things.
Right.
Or just rather should I say I'm kind of honing it to, like real apocalyptic things.
The fact that it is a starting again thing is kind of a spoiler, isn't it? Although maybe listeners don't really understand what you mean by starting again things.
Well, I suppose it was a spoiler for the first episode, the end of the first episode of the series, which was several years. Well, I think we can probably...
We're being that laissez-faire with spoilers now.
Because I gave a big spoiler away in the last episode. But anyway, and the other thing that I've been remiss and hadn't watched, which I started, was Andor.
You've never seen Andor.
I know.
See,
now,
this is inexcusable for a number of reasons, but the main one is, then this is a literal quote from before we started filming, Steph was upset that Maul Shadow Lord, the animated Star Wars series, was going to be airing on a week that she was off. Now, I put it to you that if you've not seen Andor, you have no business titting about with Maul Shadow Lord.
No. Yes, but the thing is, the animated series is more of an access point if you like have a child, because it's quite hard to get Gracie to watch Andor, I'm going to say.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Well, and also inappropriate.
Yeah.
No, she'd be running around school going, one way out, one way out.
But I love Diego Luna and, oh my God, it's so good. So
yes,
I'm really happy because there's two series in there and I haven't watched either of them. So I started that and I'm very, very pleased with it. And I just thought, God, you know, like I hadn't watched anything Star Wars-y for ages and it really filled my cup. I was like, God, Diego, he was amazing. I love being on all the different worlds. I just love the spaceships. It's so good.
I love this.
I do.
You're like the anti-K.
It's just great though, isn't it? You know, when they're like, I love the whole thing. It was absolutely brilliant. And the other thing I watched was the thing that we were going to watch for Plus all this episode and then decided not to.
Yes.
But I did watch it anyway, which is Louis Theroux's documentary Manosphere.
Into the Manosphere. I've seen loads of clips on social media, but I've not sat down to watch it because I think it will annoy me beyond words.
Right. Okay, B, have you watched it?
No.
Okay.
I've also seen clips.
Are you going to watch it?
I'm planning to watch it, yeah, but you can talk about it. It's fine. It's not like it has spoilers.
It's not a spoiler. No. Okay, so I mean, yeah, I think it's been clipped up so much. People have seen so many of the best clips of it. Firstly, I'd just say, all credit to Louis Theroux for, he is just has got a superpower of kind of being able to retain his sanity while talking to people whose views, which are, he obviously doesn't agree with, but he is, there's second to none for me, a documentary filmmaker who allows people the space and doesn't immediately say, oh, everything you say is wrong. He's just got that incredible skill as an interviewer to let people, talk about themselves and ultimately, the viewer can decide. He doesn't impose his own views. Which
he gives them enough rope.
Yeah.
I didn't want to say that, but he does.
Because it's a cliche.
Yeah, because it's a cliche. Oh,
sorry.
Right, so anyway.
I'm just trying to basically understand your point.
More interesting, my long, drawn-out explanation of what he does is not... Okay, so yeah, so most... This is mostly centred around a young man called H.S. Tiki-Toki. Right. Mm. And his extreme influence on young men. And he is kind of balls out. I fucking think OnlyFans women are bullshit and they're just the most disgusting people and Bonnie Blue's disgusting. But also, if I can make money out of them, I will. Because he's got that.
He's got
what I'm calling the manosphere accent, which I'm, as I said before, right, I'm from Luton, right? So I know so many, Andrew Tate hails from Luton, Tommy Robinson hails from Luton. There's lots of great things about Luton. Don't want to be disparaging about it, but there is it seems to have become a bit of a breeding ground, a literal breeding ground for knobs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
and they all talk like this. Yeah.
Where's this guy from? Is he American?
No, he's not. I think he's from Kent.
Oh, okay. Because most of the clips I've seen are kind of random Americans.
American guys, which are really extreme, but. One, this is going to sound strange, but dismiss these guys at your peril because the fact is they have great influence, yeah? They have influence, right? So what
literally
I took...
Influences.
Yeah, they're literally influence. So what I took from it is that, there's a sea of young men looking for leadership, looking for something, and unfortunately, they have found these people. They're only going to be successful if there's an audience. I know that sounds ridiculous. And there are people looking for something and finding it in these fucking knobs, right? Now, the crazy thing about this H.S. Tiki-Toki person, right, is he's like really... He's racist, he's homophobic, but he's one of these kind of racist people that's like, how can I be racist? That guy over there is Jewish. And you're like, fucking hell, you are so thick. You're honestly... And he is a bundle of contradictions, but the biggest contradiction about him is he literally will do anything his mummy says. So his mum features in it, and there's and this has been clipped up, where she's like, don't embarrass me, don't embarrass me, what I want this cleared up kind of thing. And she's a lovely woman, she was a single mother, she worked 6 days a week, he went to a private school. He's not stupid, he's not a stupid, he's making lots of money. But obviously, he alludes to it a little bit, his dad wasn't in his life, he's got a bit of trauma. But there's a lot of people who don't have their dads in their life and have trauma and don't turn out to be massive cocks. Like, he is... such a dickhead. And you're like, oh my God, I kind of feel sorry for him that he's such a twat.
Well, a question I had from the clips that I saw is like, how much do these Manosphere influencers actually believe what they're selling? Or are they just like, this is lucrative and the more extreme I am, the more followers I'll get?
They are modern day court jesters.
Right.
They do not believe. One of the American guys whose relationship broke down over the course of this, the filming of this. And you're like, you know, lots of women are like, thank God she got out. And he sits across from, he invites OnlyFans people on his show and he's like, you're fat and ugly and no one knows what it's. And you're like, oh my God, but that's what they're court jesters. And this guy's got a really lovely trained, well-trained dog and a girlfriend that he obviously has really thinks a lot of. And actually he says in it, oh, I don't want her to be part of it anymore because I just want her to be happy. So it's kind of embarrassing. I felt embarrassed for them that they had gone so far down the line. Yeah, if money's the goal, great, you know, make the money. Do you. Be careful, obviously. I would say have a conscience about who you're influencing. But there's a guy in there who was homeless, who had felt like he had no hope, and he started listening to these influencers and it gave him hope. If there are other ways to do
good. What happened
good.
To the homeless guy?
So he was living in his car and then he started listening to these podcasts and it gave him a sense of purpose and he's in it. And you can't deny the fact that he was somebody.
Is he no longer homeless?
He's no longer homeless because he listened to this one of these influencers who actually thought was not too horrendous, who'd said to him, you can do it. You can do it. I came from nowhere. You can do it. Somewhere in the shit of it all, there is a good message, right? But unfortunately, it is being clouded by, there's an absolutely extraordinary bit where HS Tiki Toki interviews Bonnie Bloom.
I can't help but just find that funny every time you say it.
Well, this is the thing, his real name's Harrison, right? And the thing is, he's like, he's not stupid. Lovely looking young man. Like, you think, God, I mean, for me, I'm like, the fear of God that my daughter grows up and then finds these kind of people it terrifies me. But he interviews Bonnie Blue, who he calls the most disgusting human. He's like, you are so disgusting. He calls her a dumb blonde. And it's just the overt inability to acknowledge the contradiction of his life, the whole contradiction. I just find it didn't seem clever. He was like, yeah, I don't care. I openly say these things. He's basically saying, all you people who listen to me are stupid because I already said I don't like any of this stuff. And I think these women, porn's disgusting. I think if you watch porn, you're a loser. But I will make money off it. So you can't deny the fact that he's out there saying he thinks, but also, God, it's just like, why do it? You're not, I don't know what the end goal is unless it's just to make money and be controversial.
It seems very uncomplicated to me. Like, once you realise you can make loads of money, but if you're if you're a good looking young man,
and all he these is people, and
they, but they're all trading on their looks, aren't they? I mean, like, for me, the whole world of influencers trades on their looks by and large.
Yeah.
If you go to an event where influencers are there, they're all kind of very well kempt people.
Yes.
And the Manosphere is adjacent to the whole looks maxing thing
exactly,
as well, isn't it?
So. And you've got that guy who does the looks maxing, what's his name? The doofus. Anyway, I think he's on the show. But anyway, it's such a, if you're making money, which they clearly are, out of this content by people following these people's lives, and the only way to keep that going, to keep making money and keep the content appealing to your audience is to have beef with Bonnie Blue or whoever, have beef with have supposed enemies and, you know, show all of your, everything that's going on in your, everything that's going on in your life in an uncensored way, including, you know, half of the guys involved in these things have OnlyFans things as well.
I mean,
making money, it doesn't need to act. No one in this world needs to believe in anything. Louis Theroux would say, and in fact does say, because he's done quite a lot of press about this, what he's always done is go to communities, investigate communities who are almost always something quite worrying about them, you know, to any sensible, you know, right-thinking, I don't mean right capital R, right, I mean right-thinking people. And so, you know, he does documentaries on neo-Nazis.
Yes.
Literally, and does not necessarily go to non-neo-Nazis to comment.
No.
So it's like, so I understand the point. I mean, I've watched it, so who am I to comment? But he would say that, well, it's not his, this isn't a documentary about looking at all the different sides of a debate. He doesn't do that kind of thing. That's not what he ever does. He looks into a group of people and exposes what they believe in or don't believe in or what they're saying. So he doesn't, looking at the other side of the argument isn't kind of his shtick. So I'm both bringing up that as a criticism and also I see his side of it.
I think it would have been boosted and more well received had at some point in it he had spoken to some women who were on the receiving end of this, who'd had a lot, you know, that's the only thing I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are so, first of all, you are both so far away from this kind of man that I just don't think you can access it.
I don't know, you say that. Boyd, he's got big, big manosphere energy.
No, but you are, you know, you are.
And James is looking really angry right now. This manosphere discussion has gone on for about 3 hours.
We were
going
to do it. Well,
because we've been letting a woman talk, Boydie. That's what's made me furious.
I know. He's backfired.
you Boydie Ticky Chockety, honestly. No, but it's, I mean, that's what people are talking about. Can I just also make one other point? Is that, you know, obviously, I hated Vladimir, okay? And I made no bones about it. I thought it was awful.
That's quite the pivot. And I'll be honest with you, I could not have predicted that's where you were going with this.
Well, it's just about what people are watching. And also, you know, I also like to garner opinion about what people are watching. Two people have now told me that they absolutely love Vladimir. And the reason being, one of them admitting that they thought their reason was very shallow. They just really liked watching Rachel Weisz. She's a woman of a certain age, the person who told me this, and she was like, I just love watching Rachel Weisz move. And admitted that was shallow, but yeah.
There was a thread on the subreddit slagging off Vladimir, so it's not just you.
Okay, it's just not good.
Well, none of us liked it.
No, I know none of us liked it, but I was
We thought it was quite mid. You really hated it.
I had some things I quite liked about it. Anyway, sorry, that concludes my extended Steph Celan podcast about Manosphere.
I'm glad you talked about it because I wanted to review it on this show, and I do need to see it.
I think you should watch it. I think you should watch it because I'd also be really interested on a take, because there were some women upstairs who were like, immediately like, oh my God, those, you know, and I think that's, yeah, of course, that's the really, not easy, but of course they are, and yeah, this is awful, and they're horrendous, but I think digging a little deeper, there's you know, there is more to it. But anyway, let's stop talking about Manosphere, let's talk about Boydosphere.
The Boydosphere, yes, inside the Boydosphere.
Yeah. Okay, I watched, we reviewed The Comeback on Plus.
We did.
And at that point, which was only yesterday, I'd seen six out of it. I've now seen all of it. It's really, I really loved it, yeah. And I think why I mentioned this yesterday, that HBO is trying to encourage people to, critics, I think they showed it at South by Southwest or something. I think it premiered there maybe yesterday or the day before or whatever. They encourage critics to watch all the whole series before commenting. And you can see why when you watch the whole thing, because it builds and builds and builds. And the whole AI, which the centre of it really is AI. The idea that AI can be used to write a sitcom is the bottom line. And the way they Valerie Cherish tries to keep that secret, and that's hilarious in itself. She actually tells people every single episode, more and more people every episode, that this is happening to a sitcom. Oh yeah, it's being written by AI, but it's a secret. Which becomes like a running joke that gets totally out of hand. And by the end of it, everyone in the world knows, and it's a global story.
Yeah, because they have the writer. Yeah. They call him Al,
yeah,
don't they?
Exactly, yeah. And it's so funny the way it builds and builds and builds. It's really cleverly structured, I think, this season of The Comeback. And it's just brilliant being in the company of brilliantly drawn characters who are intrinsically hilarious from start to finish. So, yeah, I absolutely loved it. Yeah, I had slight, you know, to start with, I had slight reservations for the first episode, which you'll hear our review on Plus, but fully on board. I watched The Claudia Winkleman Show on Friday.
How was it?
I really enjoyed it. This is obviously James' downtime. This is popular culture.
Get some admin done, sweetie.
Emails.
No, I really enjoyed it. And it's coming from some opinions differ. I think The Sun gave it 5 stars. The Guardian gave it 3. Guardian was quite, maybe even 2. Guardian was quite harsh.
I just want to point out The Guardian really bigged up Vladimir, though. So
yeah,
exactly.
In fact, I think it was the same writer. I thought that basically what they were trying to do was, it would have been fine if Claudia Winkleman had just sat in for Graham Norton, which she's done before, couple of years ago. She just sat in his chair. I keep using the word literally more and more, which is obviously, as everyone knows, is dangerous, because most of the time you say literally, it's not literally at all.
Okay.
Although in this case it was. She did literally sit in his chair while he was away, and the format was exactly the same as it always is, right? You know, 4 or 5 celebrity guests, a musical performance, the red chair thing he does, that was it. But what they've done now is they've given her own show, quite rightly, post-Traitors, and now she's absolute national treasure and everyone loves her, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a different format. And it started off with a kind of cold open of her mingling in the studio audience and kind of speaking to them and extracting funny stuff from them. And they actually have members of the studio audience who are loosely connected to the celebrity guests and what they're talking about. So, for example, one of the celebrity guests is talking about how much they love pencils. I think it was Tom Allen, the comedian, or maybe it was Jennifer Saunders, anyway, whichever. And they had a woman in the audience who designs pencils. And they had a long chat about the set, because obviously it was the first episode, and the set is like lots of velvet kind of, it looked like a private members club or a jazz nightclub kind of vibe. And there was a big velvet sofa, which was described as deep green kind of sofa. Mm. And the woman who chose that colour was in the audience, and she was entertainingly kind of a bit snobbish, a bit patronising. So as well as having, you know, the famous people on, Jeff Goldblum was probably the most A-list guest, they went to the studio audience, which is what they're going to do throughout. And it's not like she's interviewing the studio audience, but they're having funny little stories or connections too. And I thought that was quite nice and quite clever, because her strength is, one of her main strengths is bouncing off normal people, members of the public, in the way she deals with people in the traitors, etc., is fantastic. And I think they've kind of looked at her going, well, what's her USP? And I think in a way it's her ability to deal with famous people and non-famous people in exactly the same way. And that ends up being the USP of this show. And I thought it worked
what
really well.
What is the criticism of it?
People are saying it was a bit ramshackle. It was a bit who's interested in these people in the audience. I think people criticised it for shoehorning those people into the show. And obviously, you know, it is a bit contrived, because the researchers have gone out and found these people who have connections to what the famous people are talking about. But I went along with it. Chat shows are an intrinsically contrived format anyway. Graham Norton and Jonathan Ross, who are brilliant at it and have been doing it for decades, they are extracting anecdotes from their guests. That's kind of how it works. The guests talk to the producers, the researchers, they give them three or four anecdotes they're going to fit in, and it's the job of Jonathan Ross and Graham Norton to bring those anecdotes in. And it's intrinsically, you know, contrived. And she did very well, I think, Claudia, with making it all seem natural and flowing and quite, you know, freewheeling. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. The Oscars, can I just mention the Oscars coverage of TV?
James, is he allowed to mention
that? No, I'm talking about TV coverage.
He's talking about the broadcast,
the show.
So on a technicality, Your Honour.
Not even technicality. I'm talking about it as a TV event.
I did want to mention something about the Oscars.
Well,
let's see if you're going to mention it.
Well, what I was going to mention was, I know listeners like it very much when I talk about Richard Osman's podcast, and I'm going to mention it again now. They did an Oscars special, and they were talking about how, you know, in 3 or 4 years' time, the YouTube is going to be the exclusive place to watch the Oscars. And Richard Osman was suggesting that, in fact, both of them were, Marina Hyde and him, were suggesting that when it ends up on YouTube, they'll almost YouTube it, in terms of, like, they'll kind of rethink the whole format. And he's like, it's too long. It goes on for 3.5 hours. They'll make it sure it's like 90 minutes. They won't have acceptance speeches. Or if they do, they'll be in another bit of YouTube. You know, you can watch separately. And they have this whole kind of, and I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen.
I think
what's happening is, YouTube will get a lot of prestige for being the home of the Oscars, this hugely prestigious event, annual event, TV event. And that's why they're getting involved, to kind of increase their, you know, image in a way, to kind of, even though it's the biggest media company in the world right now, I was reading only this morning. But I don't think they're going to change and I also don't think the Academy would ever agree to changing the show so radically, and they don't have long acceptance
speeches.
Why would they?
Because
it's the event, and the kind of classiness of the event is part of the whole point of it, which they were saying it's boring. Of course it is, but you're still going to get a massive audience talking about it. It's still an incredible pop culture story, even though fewer people watch it than they did, you know, 3 or 4 or even 10 years ago.
Yeah, but the thing, that's ridiculous, because the thing is, you do what I do. If I haven't stayed up to watch the Oscars, which I sometimes do, I just YouTube the acceptance speeches, acceptance speeches,
sure.
So I can watch those things. So why would you
including the ones that were cruelly cut short.
Yes, yes.
You know,
but that's what you do when you... You YouTube the Sinners musical performance with Misty Copeland, one of the greatest ballerinas of all time, strutting her stuff in front of ballet hater Timothy Chalamet. Which I know you guys disagreed with me about that, but I thought that stealth appearance was absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Well,
a standing ovation.
Conan O'Brien's joke about the opera, I think, was the best joke.
Yes.
It was a good joke.
It was a really good joke.
Good joke.
I thought he did a really good job. There were a couple of VTs they didn't really need to have in them that he did, but the opening weapons skit was brilliant, brilliantly done with him being chased, dressed up as the mad Amy Madigan character and being chased by loads of mad school kids onto the stage of the Oscars was absolutely brilliantly done. And at the end, they had a post-ending sketch reenacting a scene from one battle after another that was really clever as well. So it was kind of bookended by two brilliantly done sketches based on the two of the huge films. But I thought they did a pretty good job. And I just think it doesn't need to be completely revamped. It is what it is. You just can't get hung up on the fact that, of course, the ratings are going to go down. Ratings go down for every show every year, but it's still going to retain its importance as the most prestigious. You know, there's too much of a big industry surrounding predictions and everything. It's a gigantic annual event, and it's not going to be cut to ribbons on YouTube. And I will bet anyone that it retains the basic structure and length of the Oscars now when it ends up on YouTube in 2 or 3 years' time.
This is Boyd's lengthy way of telling us that they are wrong on that other podcast. Yeah. Okay, fine. No,
he does enjoy
total.
That.
Yeah.
I do enjoy that. And finally, I've watched a few episodes of Your Friends and Neighbours season 2, which is coming up. We may or may not review it, depending on how many brand new things are.
You've watched all of this.
I have.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you watched all of it. James Marsden. I won't be breaking. Actually, I think we're okay to review it. But yeah, James Marsden is a very, very interesting presence in the second season, and very, yeah, that's all I'll say. Try not to ruin the,
right, don't say
ruin the embargo. There we go. That's me.
I enjoyed that, boy.
Thanks, mate.
Given that the podcast is nearly over at this
okay,
point,
right,
I will. I'll keep this really short.
Yeah.
What have I been watching this week? I have watched almost all of Daredevil: Born Again, which is which we can't review on this particular show because it is embargoed.
Someone's got to review it and watch it, I suppose. Yeah,
yeah. So I've been watching all of that. Right, Boyd, clearly not a fan.
Sorry.
I've got
a little bit of Marvel fatigue, but it's fine.
Okay. That's understandable. The only thing I will say about it, and this is not a review, and to be fair, this carries on from the first season, but watching it is really uncomfortable. It's really quite chilling because let's just say it's a very thinly veiled portrait of American politics, but it's quite
It's a ribbon.
Flinching. If it was on the podcast, I'd cut it all out.
Yeah.
It is quite, you know, you have the kingpin, he's the mayor, he's running a criminal enterprise, he has a sort of paramilitary force of kind of quote-unquote law enforcement officers kicking down doors and doing stuff for him. It's quite extraordinary.
Wow.
So that's quite pointed, but I am, without spoiling it or breaking the embargo, enjoying it a lot. So that was that. I've watched almost all of Criminal Record as well. We'll be reviewing that probably in a few weeks, so we'll worry about then. And then For All Mankind, I had an absolute nightmare. I was so excited. I was watching, and I was like, yes, I'm going to get to the end. I got to the end. I was like, that's not the end. And then I realised they'd withheld the last two episodes.
Oh, your most hated thing.
And that's my most hated thing. So I've got to the end of it, and now I was getting so good, and I lost my absolute mind over it, so I don't have the last two episodes. I know this is a very first world entitled problem, but...
Have you emailed them?
I may have emailed them.
Of course you did.
It didn't help.
Of course you did.
So you've watched almost all of the new season of For All Mankind?
Yes.
When you were once like, oh, God.
For the first time ever, you know, like, this is a bit like the space race, isn't it, Boyd? I don't know if you're the Russians and this is hard to say, but I've surpassed you, and I'm the first man on the moon, so to speak.
Yes, it's very much like that. Yeah. What a parallel.
I am now ahead on For All Mankind.
Oh, God, that's annoying.
Well, not if you get the finale first, babe.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That is true.
I've never got a finale. I've never, ever got a finale before he did.
Well, I'm just saying, it might be interesting if you did.
Well, I'm going to drop my friend Tim Cook a line and see if he can hook me up with the final episode.
A cookster.
But yes, I'm enjoying that. I'm now really looking forward to Star City as well, which is of course the spin-off.
And I read the other day they've just started filming the next season of For All Mankind.
Can't have too much of it.
I'm going to start this because
it's really good. But it gets better. Each season is better than the last, which is why it's so excellent.
But now I'm on Paradise and Andor.
We'll finish those first. Andor being one of the greatest TV shows of all time, but without exaggeration.
Really?
Yeah. Really? I genuinely think there's an argument made that it's the best thing Star Wars has ever done.
Okay, so where does it sit in, you know, Mandalorian territory?
Mandalorian isn't even fit to shine its stormtrooper boots. Like, it pisses all over the Mandalorian.
Really?
Yes.
It did immediately seem... but I love
Mandalorian golden shouts.
Yeah, Mandalorian's fun, but it's quite slight. This is extraordinary.
I agree with James. It is absolutely the best thing. Yeah, it is. I remember saying this when The Mandalorian came out, and it goes 10 times for Andor, which is that when we were watching Star Wars, I wanted to see Star Wars when in the cinema in 1977 when I was 10 years old and was a, you know, life-changing experience. And imagine then if you go, oh, but there's going to be a thing on TV in, you know, 50 years' time, which is going to be, take this world and be incredibly provocative and fascinating and have millions of characters you care about deeply. It's extraordinary to think what they've done with it and they have achieved this show.
I mean, I immediately love Cass. Like, I love him so much. I don't want anything bad to ever happen to him. So please, I really hope nothing bad ever happens.
Yeah, but you like him from the show because you watch Rogue One, you give no shits about him whatsoever.
Yes, that's so true.
But this is the thing, and we talked about this, and God, I'm so sorry, we're banging on about this again. But when Andor, when they announced Andor, the world shrugged, the most severe shrug they've ever shrugged.
Well, you did.
Because it was just like, who the fuck gives a shit about Cassie and Andor? And that was a legitimate response until we saw the show.
James did. Some other people.
It did immediately feel like I was just watching the beginning of another Star Wars film. I was like, oh, this is just like a Star Wars film.
Yeah, but that's in a good way.
I'm saying it's brilliant. Mm. It's absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, oh, okay, well.
Yes, you press on with that.
I will.
But For All Mankind is great. And there is a show this week, which we're going to get on to, which we're going to review, which has Joel Kinnaman in it. Mm. And it freaked me out not seeing him with a metric ton of prosthetics on
him. Yeah, you talked about this before.
So I was like, oh my God, he looks so young. Okay. But yeah, that's his actual age.
Wow.
So it's fine.
So, right, just for my own arrangement of my personal life, so should I just go, like, Andor, just keep going and just put Paradise to the side for now?
I probably would. I think Andor benefits from being watched in a kind of chunk.
It feels like that.
Yes.
Okay.
If you want to take a quick pause after season one, that's fine.
Okay.
But yes, it does benefit from, I think, a
How many episodes are in Andor?
It's in blocks, isn't it? So it's 12, I want to say.
Okay.
Right. So yeah, blocks of three.
If you, like me, are beginning Andor, this is how you should watch it. Okay, great. Thank you.
Right, that is what we've been watching. We move on now to this week's listener question, and it is an unconventional question from Liz. And Liz says, Dear Pod Team, first things first, it was lovely to have Kay back recently and then lovely to hear Steph again. Basically, this job share is a win-win for us listeners.
Oh, and Kay will be back week after next. She'll be back doing two weeks, four
episodes.
You can
exclusively reveal.
Can exclusively reveal.
Just in time for Maul Shadow Lord.
which I made a complaint about. Anyway, yes, so she will be back doing, for your Easter festivities, Kay will be back.
Will she bring chocolate? Because if she's not laden with chocolate eggs, she can't come back.
All I would say is if you don't give her a Milky Bar chocolate eggs, she'll be really upset because she loves Milky Bar chocolate. She loves white chocolate.
That's the worst choice of egg I've ever heard. But anyway, back to Liz. Liz says, I don't know what made me remember this, but it prompted a question for the pod. There used to be a pub in Angel that would play audio of Blackadder episodes in the toilets. It might still. I've not been there for a bit. It was a handy refuge during organised fun work nights out. And in one instance, from an excruciatingly boring date where it was too early to leave. So my question, what other sitcom would make for good toilet refuge audio? Thanks for piloting. You brightened my week. Liz.
I'm sorry, I want to know what that pub is.
I have been there.
Angelic. Because
do you know what? I don't remember the name of the pub and I didn't even remember that it was an Angel, but yes. I have 100% been there because I remember being delighted at hearing my beloved Blackadder playing in the toilets.
It is known for its Ministry of Magic style toilets, which play audio clips and soundbites from the popular British sitcom Blackadder, The Angelic. That is fantastic.
That's an incredibly shrewd choice, I think.
Yeah.
Blackadder, because Blackadder, I mean, yes, it's visually interesting as well, but it's so, the voicing is so caricatured. Mm. The voicing is so specific and the skits are quite condensed as well. So I would say, you know, depending on how long you're in there, like you could quite happily get through like a whole scene because they're not that long.
If you're in there for big jobs, then
maybe you want something else. I know. But what I'm saying is a quick visit and you can still get like a good, you know, Baldrick, Blackadder scene, a bit of Percy, a bit of Melchett.
I wonder how they do it technically. Like, what are they playing? What are they doing with this audio? Do you know what I mean? Where is it coming from? Where do they, is it on a CD?
No, I mean, there's not like a gramophone in the corner playing. It's playing out of speakers.
Yeah, but no, but what's the source material?
So are they playing just the DVD?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's an interesting question.
See?
If I were doing it, I would probably cut specific scenes and just play the audio of them.
Okay.
And I imagine since they're famous for it, they probably go to some lengths, right?
Yeah, I'm going to phone them after this and ask them how they do.
And also, do they pick out specific, oh, this is a good one, you know?
Whose idea was it?
Visual ones you'd kind of ideally want to avoid because you can't assume, especially with the younger people, that they will have seen.
Yeah, I wouldn't do Mr. Bean.
No, again, which is entirely visual, right? It would just be him going, my joke. And you'd be like, what is happening?
He's spelling it out.
I love it. When James explains your jokes, it's delightful.
I find it helpful. Yeah.
What Boyd means with that joke.
What Boyd meant when he said the funny thing was this. Yes.
I'm going to say In Between Us. Thanks, Paul.
That's not a bad shout, actually.
That's a good call. Not bad.
Well done, Steph. Yeah. Well done, you. No, that isn't. Which is because it hadn't crossed my mind. But yes, that is a good shout. Because again, you've got to think about distinctive voices that they do, and they do have very distinctive voices. You couldn't do Fawlty Towers for obvious reasons because it's deeply problematic these days. But if you were to carefully select the scenes, you could probably get away with it. Although that is a very visual show.
No, I think you could hear bus wankers like in the toilet and it would be hilariously funny.
You could.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Stath Let's Flats. Do you remember that sitcom?
Of course.
Yeah.
Do you remember that sitcom from the other year?
Yeah. Yes. Do you remember? Yeah, you remember it. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
I think we actually reviewed it.
I feel like Kay really likes that one. I think that's got enough.
Yeah, Jamie Dimitriou and Natasha and his sister Natasha.
And then I'm also going to say Parks and Rec if you're in an American toilet or just anyway.
So I had a question about this because I was thinking that one of you or both of you would mention A, Parks and Rec, or B, The Office. But so much of those shows is completely dialogue-free reaction shots.
Right.
I have not mentioned those shows.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a pile on
now. Hold on. No, because if you think of Ron's always just doing really good groans and, annoying reactions.
In Parks and Recreation?
Yeah.
I guess so.
But that's,
you know what I mean, don't you?
That's sort of pseudo-documentary format. There's a lot of sort of like, to camera just blank stares and shocked looks. And I think there's a visual element that I think wouldn't translate.
Okay, and I'm going to say my other one that I always bring up that no one cares about but me, but King of Queens, because I think that has got, hold on, wait for it.
Well, to get people out the toilets quickly. So that's, you know,
Jerry
helpful.
Stiller's... Don't be. Just don't. Jerry Stiller's dad in that. Lots of great one-liners.
It was also in a little show called Seinfeld, which I won't mention because I always mention it.
Good God.
Well, now that you've literally shit all over my answers,
we got a huge amount of acclaim, literally, and also
figuratively, definitely not literally.
Worst use of literally today. And that's saying something because I used it about a dozen times. Oh, my God. No, we absolutely acclaimed The In-Betweeners. Okay. You should have just stopped there.
Yeah, you should have stopped there.
That would be my advice. Yeah, I'm going to just do one. Show.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
because you didn't have enough time to look at.
Well, I didn't have enough time.
Okay. Anyway, go on. Go on.
Anyway, the answer is, which is topical as well, regarding the Oscars. You know what I'm going to say? Toast of London.
I have heard that as well.
Matt Berry.
Yes.
He has the best voice in the world, which was utilized brilliantly. He was the announcer.
He was,
at the Oscars. And if you've seen, he did the announcement before the show, which is hilarious, where he kind of addressed the whole audience and told them, they were living in a fantasy world because they're actors. And he did all the announcements during the show, which, by the way, the stop me harping on about the Oscars again, in brackets, the sound was dreadful.
Yeah, lots of people have
weird.
Said that.
They fucked up, they managed to fuck up the sound of one of the biggest live shows in American the TV calendar, and you couldn't hear what they were saying half the time. You couldn't hear Matt Berry's announcements half the time. Anyway, Toast of London is a mainly verbal, the comedy throughout is like funny.
You're right.
His voice, but also him meeting his mad agent, him meeting his brilliant housemate. It's all dialogue. It's very much not, I mean, there are visual gags, don't get me wrong, but there's a distinctive joy of the words, the vocabulary that he uses as well that makes it absolutely brilliant to listen to. I've often listened to the audio book of Toast of London. They did a book and it's fucking hilarious. And my one, so that's just one. My one other would be anything to do with Alan Partridge, because obviously
Do you know what's really annoying?
Well, that's also how Alan started out, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's such a great answer for a question that you've only researched for like 3 seconds.
Thanks.
I'm really jealous.
Okay. Well,
so anyway, my ones are Toast of London and
no, but the in-betweeners, you still let's not forget.
Yeah, let's not forget.
Now let's see. Now James is gonna have a list of about 20.
No.
Rattle through.
No.
And he's not gonna pick the obvious ones. He's gonna have gone left field. Come on.
No, I'm not. I mean the obvious answer to this is one I'm not allowed to give, which is that Friends is the obvious answer because it's something everybody knows and everyone can quote. So there's an instant familiarity. So you do not need to see the visual because you will automatically have them playing in your head when you hear it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not allowed to mention Friends because I overuse it. So I would say if we're keeping in the Blackadder theme, Red Dwarf would be a good choice.
Oh, I love
think.
Red Dwarf.
Again, very funny, distinctive voices, distinctive characters, relatively short skits. I think that
you
would work very
you
well.
You love Red Dwarf.
I love Red Dwarf. I am such a massive Red Dwarf fan.
There's a dwarfer.
When I was at Empire. God, this is making me feel really emotional. I met the cast of Red Dwarf and I got them to sign something for me. And I got them to sign a DVD for me. And it is one of my prized possessions. I've locked it away so that because I wanted to put it on display, but I didn't.
You locked it away
because I love Red Dwarf so much. I was really like, me and my brother used to watch Red Dwarf again and again. God, it's amazing, Red Dwarf. I'm going to do a rewatch.
It is very good.
You're groomed
to like it.
I know, I just I love it.
Do you know what? I've never, ever liked Red Dwarf.
Really?
How can you not like Cat in Red Dwarf? It's so funny.
Where was your access point? When did you start watching it? What season? Because that is vital.
I mean, I think I tried it right from the beginning.
Really? You
know, it appealed to me.
It did take a little while to get started. Like, I actually really liked the first couple of seasons, but really I think series three is when it hits its stride.
I think all of Red Dwarf is brilliant.
I think that's an indefensible position because like season seven and eight are dreadful.
Let's just agree to agree with me, okay? Because I've never ever got on with it.
But one thing I realised recently, so it went up to Red Dwarf 12 and then there was a film. There was a Red Dwarf film. It was like a feature-length episode.
Yeah, it on UK TV.
And they were going to do a few of those. I'm not sure I ever saw that feature-length film. I might have done, but I don't think we covered it. And I don't think I watched it. So that is something I need to watch.
I definitely remember mentioning it as a thing. Because they revived it on UK TV, didn't they? Dave or whatever.
Yeah. And that was with 10. I want to say Red Dwarf 10.
Yeah, and they were massively popular as well. They got huge ratings, etc.
I think Red Dwarf is such a specific type of comedy that you're either absolutely love it or you just don't get it.
I mean, apart from the sci-fi setting, I think it's like not the kind of thing James would normally like.
Well, you're right, because it's quite silly. I think you get the grandfather clause for a lot of this, where it gets grandfathered in because it was a formative comedy for me. Blackadder, Fawlty Towers, they were all formative comedies for me. It will always have a special place in my heart.
It just never had the wit for me of Blackadder.
John Jules as a cat does not... Are you joking? No. He's one of the greatest characters ever.
You've
got to appreciate that he is a great character. He's hilariously funny. No?
I don't find him hilariously funny, no.
I thought Rimmer had the best lines. Rimmer always had the best lines.
No, I don't. Oh, God, we should do a Red Dwarf.
We should. A Red Dwarf watch along. We watched the whole show end to end. Oh, it's fabulous. So that would be mine. And the other thing that I was thinking was it's about mellifluous voices. And we review another show.
It's about what?
Mellifluous voices.
Do you? Right. Okay. Stop it, right? You keep using incredibly long words, right? And not only do you use long words, but you say them really quickly, okay? And then I don't know what they mean and I don't want to look stupid, so I have to nod. But now I'm going to have to... I thought you were saying Maleficent. I was like, what is he talking about?
Maleficent voices. No, I'm just basically giving you ammunition to moan to Kay about on your group chat.
What
it's just sort
mean?
Of sweet-sounding voices. Like, hasn't it?
Did
has
you
very...
know what that meant?
Yeah.
No, it's pleasant to listen to, sort of melodious, if you will. So we are reviewing a show later on. It contains the best Patrick Stewart joke I have ever heard. Like, it was a proper stand-up and applause moment for me. I was thrilled to bits with it. Wow. And that made me realise that Patrick Stewart, he could read the phone book and it would be just delightful. So I actually think, on those grounds alone, Star Trek The Next Generation would not be a bad show. Because you've basically got Sir Pat Stew just talking about photon torpedoes.
Didn't the listeners specify comedies, though?
They did, but I've gone off-piste.
Of course you have.
I'm going to try and use the word mellifluous in a sentence
Or maleficent.
Today.
You know, whatever. Either one.
Do it in one of your crime stories.
A mellifluous murder.
Yeah, mellifluous stabbing.
No, I'm going to use it. I've never heard that word before. I can't be the only one.
Well, I think we have exhaustively answered that toilet soundtrack question. So if you would like to send in a query, a thought, a question, feedback, anything you want, it is pilottv@empiremagazine.com. Fabulous. Now, you're sure, Boyd, you haven't interviewed anyone that I need to drop in here? Because if you haven't, we'll move on to news.
It's entirely possible.
It is possible.
But,
no?
I don't think so.
No. News it is, then. Who's got news for me?
I have... Have we mentioned the BTS documentary that's coming out 27th of March?
Do you mean K-pop BTS?
Yes. What are you scoffing?
You're just deliberately provoking James now, aren't you, with these,
okay,
these
I'll move
pop
on.
Culture
the
references.
You know BTS. Everybody likes BTS.
What, behind the scenes?
Why is he doing this to me today, Boyd? Why? 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 Well,
something unusual about it.
No, that's true. Okay, right, I'm going to move on. Anyway, BTS, for all you BTS fans out there, documentary is on 27th of March Netflix, which is a week fantastic because they're back. Now, this is something I'm very excited about and I think you will be. This is very much an access point for people who don't particularly like true crime but do like Vicky McClure, which I think is everybody. Okay, so Vicky McClure is going to be doing a show called Britain's Murder Map, right? It's a documentary series for Sky History with historian Johnny Owen, 5-part series. Looks
her
fabulous.
Partner.
Huh?
Her partner.
Is that her partner?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Mm. Do you know what else I didn't know? I didn't know.
What mellifluous meant.
I didn't know what mellifluous meant. I can't be the only one. And I have a degree. I have a master's and I didn't know what that meant.
Do you? In what?
Publishing. My degree in psychology from UCL, okay. No less, and my master's in publishing from London College of Printing. Anyway, yes, partners. Do you know who I didn't know? I didn't know that Krista Miller was Bill Lawrence's partner. You know, in Shrinking?
Yeah, vaguely.
Kay, where are you, Kay, when I need you? Anyway, okay, Savage River is coming, or an Australian crime drama. It's coming to ITVX on the 12th of April, which is exciting. Also something you won't care about because it's crime.
Accurate.
That Vicky McClure thing is going to be Tuesday the 7th of April.
Can I say, in bigger Vicky McClure news, sorry to trample on your...
You're having a McClure off.
Well,
yeah, this is like Dinosaur off from last week. Go on,
More importantly, they all posted shots of the read-through for the new series of Line of Duty. Including Vicky McClure,
I wouldn't say that was more important. I think she cares about her series, Britain's Murder Map.
Okay, but come on.
Investigating the murders, the Burke and Hare murders.
All right, but not only do we get the shot of the read-through of the new season of the long, long, long awaited, the most awaited show in the history of television, but also new cast members were announced as well.
Oh, who are they?
Steph.
Okay, that is
Let
exciting.
Me tell you who they are. They include, brilliantly, Laura Aikman, of The City Is Ours and Gavin and Stacey fame. Remember, she played the Gavin and Stacey character, his new girlfriend, who we thought at the beginning of the final episode
that she was going to marry.
Exactly.
Oh, she's great.
She's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Laura Aikman, Levi Brown, who you recognise from This Town, is in it. These are both detectives in the show. Okay. Amy Lee Hickman, who's in Ackley Bridge, she is in it, and it's all very, very exciting. Tom Weston Jones, who's in Warrior and Sanditon.
Sanditon,
which we reviewed on this very podcast, I seem to remember.
We did, we did.
And there are returning characters. Mark Bonner's character, you remember Mark Bonner, who's absolutely brilliant, as Deputy Chief Constable Mark Dryden. Mm. Owen Teal as Chief Constable Philip Osborne. Perry Fitzpatrick as DS Chris Lomax. And Christina Chong as DI Nikki Rogerson.
No Anna Maxwell Martin.
No Anna Maxwell Martin yet. I would personally not be surprised if that becomes a surprise.
I hope she does come back because she's fabulous.
Brilliant in it, wasn't she? Absolutely brilliant in it. But the fact that this is all happening, and presumably they'll start filming it any time now. Well, literally now because they just did the read-through. it's very exciting. Yeah.
In the other Vicky McClure news, there also is Paradise, which I'm now watching, has been confirmed for season 3.
Good.
Yeah,
I'm
which
glad.
Is interesting. Yeah, yeah. Which means they don't die at the end of season two.
Spoiler for Paradise season two.
I mean, one assume. No, I haven't watched it. I haven't seen it. I don't know.
Have you not watched any Paradise?
No. We reviewed it. I watched the first few episodes.
Okay.
Controversially, yeah, we did a proper review. Where were you?
So, I don't know.
K week.
It was probably a K week. It was probably a job share.
Can we please address the big news of the week?
Yes.
Like what? The big news of the week, the huge news of the week, the seismic, monumental, mellifluous news of the week. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is no more.
Yeah, that wasn't
the Buffy reboot, which was like New Sunnydale, was it called? It's no longer with Chloe Zhao. It's no longer happening because apparently, a Disney exec didn't like it.
Mm.
A Disney exec who apparently crucially does not like Buffy, like isn't into Buffy.
No,
nixed it.
It's killed insane, isn't it?
Because Sarah Michelle Gellar has outed that person. I don't know if she's named them, but she said there was a particular exec who just was not a fan of Buffy and just wasn't feeling it.
See, that's the kind of thing that might happen on this podcast. You discount, you know, if you say you don't like a certain genre, you discount something, you know, and you can't do that.
You can't do that.
What are you saying? You're going to axe the podcast because I didn't like Red Dwarf.
And this will be my last episode.
Right. And that seems perfectly reasonable.
This was extraordinary, and particularly because of the public nature of Sarah Michelle Gellar revealing what happened, because you don't really, this happens all the time, I'm sure, you know, behind
you
the scenes.
You don't normally get someone.
It's not exposed to the world.
But it was obviously so killed so badly that she was like, oh, I've got nothing to lose.
You'd think someone else will step in.
They will
you?
Now. They will now. They definitely will.
You think?
Yeah.
But I mean,
what
sadly
often
for you, they're not going to revive Veronica Mars, because I know you're worried about
I mean, I was. Although, they are reviving Firefly.
Oh, that's exciting.
It is and it isn't.
No, it is exciting. It like Firefly.
It is.
Nathan Fillion?
Yes, we love it. We love it. Obviously, we're the Whedon in the room is something we're just avoiding with these last two stories. But,
let's not talk about that.
Let's not talk about that. What they're doing with Firefly, because Nathan Fillion was speaking to all the cast on social media, thinking, oh, something's going to happen. Turns out, animated series.
Oh.
And so they're voice acting the roles.
Okay.
And obviously animation is not that close to my heart, but that's not the reason I'm upset.
Oh.
The reason I'm upset is this animation takes place between the end of Firefly the show, when it got cancelled after 13 episodes.
And Serenity
the movie. In that period, which is one of the reasons why it's animated. I'm like, no, actually, I think this show would have been better if they'd continued it after Serenity. So as their actual ages, you know, live action thing. I mean, yes, Alan Tudyk wouldn't be in it, you know, so you'd lose certain characters. Spoiler for Serenity.
If you haven't watched Serenity, you would literally not give a shit about this news.
Absolutely true. Right. But I really want to see, a grizzled Malcolm Reynolds. You know, I want to see them as they are now. That's what I want. I want a series. I want the series to continue after Serenity. That's what I wanted. So actually, weirdly, it's great, but also it's a bit disappointing, the nature of it.
Yeah, but again, as I said previously, animated series are good access points for if you have people that are small and you want to get them into this kind of stuff. It's good.
Sure.
Okay, I know you literally don't care. Right. Boyd, sorry, I feel like you hadn't finished your point about things happening behind the scenes and things getting cancelled. Had you finished your point?
No, I think I'd finished my point.
Okay.
No, I thought, it was unusual. There was one other thing I was going to say, which was what often weirdly happens is that even though, so it's with Disney, ABC or whatever, who are developing it, right? And you'd think, oh, okay, so someone else will step in. But often those people insist on retaining the rights and won't let anyone else make it. So they do, that is the double whammy. That's what happened with the OA, which is the example who I always go back to. So Netflix cancelled it, but they then wouldn't let anyone else make it, carry on making it. It's like you're in a...
That's a bit like being a spoiled child.
Yeah, it is a bit, yeah. But it happens constantly, apparently. You know,
so. Well, I find it really amazing that one exec could wield so much power
It's a flaw in the TV industry system, it really is, yeah.
I didn't realise that was the case, that it would have one exec could just say no.
Yeah, absolutely. These things come down to taste, you know, and often people are stupid enough to... It kind of happens in all creative worlds, really. You know, I always often think, you know, in my history as a writing for various magazines, etc., people decide they don't want you to write about something just because they're not interested in that thing, but can't then go
That's
beyond
true.
Their imagination to think, well, millions of people might be interested in it, it's just not me who's interested. And that failure is clearly a creative one in this case with the Buffy revival that is now no longer...
Yeah, that's true. One of Kay's things was there were certain TV shows that she wanted to write about and editors we had at the time were like, no, nobody watches...
Boyd, specifically.
No, but there was one person who was like, yeah, we can't do anything on Game of Thrones because nobody watches Game of Thrones. And we were like, what? And then somebody else was like, yeah, EastEnders, is it really a thing? And we were like, oh, wow.
Yeah, she wasn't having a go at me, James. Let me
no,
just
no, no, I'm not having
clear.
A go at you. I'm having a go at the people above.
So you say.
I would never do have a go at you.
I'm going to mention the big BAFTA news of the week, which is that the Memorable Moment nominations have been revealed. Was I on the panel deciding this shortlist? Yes, I was.
This is like when you nominated the Micro Wave moment, isn't it?
Here we go. Yes, it is that genius moment.
Just ignore him.
The genius moment in which what's her name said Micro Wave. Yes,
Nigella
Lawson. Thank you. I think it's a really good list, and I'm biased.
You
obviously,
do say so yourself.
Heavily involved. They are. So there's six nominated memorable moments, and they are adolescence. Jamie snapping at the psychologist. Ooh, remember that moment?
The
that tete a tete.
Hot chocolate moment.
Yeah, that moment. Yeah, incredible.
Never look at hot chocolate again.
Big Same Boys, the scene at the beginning of the finale when he says, I didn't make it, did I? That incredibly moving realization.
That actually just gave me chills. Yeah.
Yeah. Blue Lights. Do you remember Blue Lights? James will approve. I'm liking it all so far.
Here you go, sweetie.
It's quite a James friendly list.
What's the Blue Lights moment?
There's an ambush plot to silence the key witness, and then like they don't know whether to go or not. Do you remember they're in the police car?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, should we go? Shouldn't we go? What should we do? Shouldn't we do? And it's incredibly tense.
Okay.
Fantastic
That's great.
Moment. Yeah. Celebrity Traitors, Alan Cole winning. Remember the winning moment? That was a tough one because a lot of people wanted to have the fart, you know.
Yeah. What's her name?
Yeah.
Celia Emery,
yes.
But we went for him winning was such a joyous moment. You know, it's like crying and everything.
Well, as you know, James and I didn't watch that, but we are committed. I'm committed, sorry, to watching the next series of Celebrity Traitors. James will not.
Fair enough.
Unless Sir Patrick Stewart is in it.
Oh, yes, we did.
In which
say
case,
that.
I will.
You will. Yes.
I mean, he could be because, you know, I mean, he's in
yes,
this week's
could.
One of the Switch
well,
shows, as already the aforementioned mellifluous tones. last one laughing. Bob Mortimer and Richard Ayoade's speed date. They were the two finalists,
right.
If you like, and they're brilliant together. That was a show full of moments that could have had. They launched season two this week, which I couldn't go to, sadly. And finally, What It Feels Like for a Girl, which I'm very pleased got nominated, because in general, that was just a brilliant, brilliant show. And it was when Byron left Brighton to start university, and she introduces herself as Paris.
Oh.
So she, yeah, it's because it's a trans story.
No, I know. We reviewed it. It's a great show. Do you remember?
Yeah.
It was absolutely brilliant.
So I think it's a really good list. And you can vote. Public can vote for now at www.bafta.org/moment.
Right.
You'll find it. Google it. So there you go. It's the only category voted for by members of the public, of course.
Well, which are the ones that really matter?
They are the ones that really matter. And the actual BAFTA TV Awards.
Did you see his face?
What?
I literally
didn't say a thing.
Yeah, no,
I did not say a thing.
You were face acting.
Well, because they're voted for by members of the public.
Yeah.
Oh,
and those
that.
Are the people that really matter. Those are the people press the remote controls. Yes.
The people on the ground.
People on the ground.
Anyway, the BAFTA TV Awards are on Sunday the 10th of May, 2026, and I'm not being paid by them to publicise this stuff. It's just
Are you allowed to say now what would be your pick?
Or I is think that so.
Be, what would you be your
can.
Pick?
Do you know what? It's hard, isn't
it's
it?
It's really hard.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, it's apples and pears, isn't it? Apples and oranges, whatever the phrase is.
It's apples and pears stairs.
Yeah, apples, that's it, yeah. Because adolescence is an incredibly powerful moment and like shocking and, you know, scary in a way. And then you've got the joy of Alan Carr's win. On Traitors, I'm kind of torn between those two.
I love adolescence. I feel like it's just, you know, it could skip this one out because it's had so many awards. It's just, you know, it's had enough.
Blue Lights it is. Right.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to go for Big Boys. I love that.
Okay. Go for it, yeah.
Okay.
Patrick Wilson and Jason Ritter have been added to the cast of The Last of Us Part 3. Well,
this is the news.
I say The Last of Us Part 3.
All...
The Last of Us Season 3. It's actually Part 2. But yes.
This is the news we've all been.
It is. Do you know why? Because Patrick Wilson is playing Jerry.
Okay, right. This is the one thing I don't watch, so you know I don't watch this.
That's Abby's dad. That's quite a pivotal role.
I don't know who Abby is.
Well, that's not my fault.
Is Abby the
Caitlin
girl,
Deva.
Is she played by the Game of Thrones lady?
No, that's Ellie.
Ellie, right, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And Jason Ritter is playing a WLF soldier called Hanley.
Okay.
WWF?
Yeah, the Washington Liberation Front. Not WWF, that's something very different.
Okay. Essentially, this third series is telling the same story as series two, but from a different point
of
view, right?
Yes, that is exactly what's happening.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. you know, we have mentioned this before, it is apocalyptic, isn't it?
No, but it's so good. I think you'd like it.
Okay, I'm going to try it.
I think you would like it.
Once I've done Andor, yes. Paradise, the Mars program. The Mars program, what's it called?
For All Mankind.
For All Mankind.
And it's spin off.
I'm going to do the last one. The Starfleet thing or whatever. No, not Starfleet. What is it called? Star City.
You know what you need, Steph? You need a sofa list.
I do need a sofa list.
Just of apocalyptic shows.
Yes. Yeah.
Apocalyptic shows you need to watch.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I'll put it on my sofa list, which I'm going to make in a minute.
Good.
Right.
We done with news?
Yeah.
We've moved on. Let's move on from news. And let's go into this week's reviews. And first up this week, I have decided, for no real reason, we're going to do Bait on Prime Video. And this is a comedy from Ben Carlin. It stars Riz Ahmed as Shah Latif, an actor going through a difficult patch. Until that is, he gets an audition for a Bond film, which, to be fair, turns his life upside down. Now, Boydie, tell us about this. This does feature the Patrick Stewart joke that I mentioned, the greatest Patrick Stewart joke of all time, which I'm actually not going to spoil, although it's killing me not to spoil it. But I'm not going to spoil it. So tell us about this.
Yeah, so I think each episode begins with Patrick Stewart interviewing Riz Ahmed's character, doesn't it? On a podcast.
Is it every episode?
It's
the second episode.
Oh, is it not the beginning of the first
crucially,
episode?
Crucially, and it's one of the reasons why I wanted to start with this, because I'm fascinated to see how this goes, because they... And Prime are the worst offenders at this sometimes on their viewing site. The episodes were out of order.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. Yeah.
And so I started watching. I'm like, this is a real in media res. And then, of course, yes. I realised it's episode two at the top and episode one is at the bottom of the list.
So I did watch episode one. So
episode one does not begin with a podcast.
Oh, okay.
No. See, episode two begins with a podcast.
I never take notes.
You watched episode two.
I've watched this out of order.
Yes. Oh. I thought you might. Because we did this once before with a Prime show. I can't even remember what it was called. But I remember thinking, I was like, this is really bold and audacious. Like they don't spoon feed you at all.
They go straight into the house and the security. That's episode two.
Oh, that's episode two. Yeah. The irony is, I was watching. I had to catch up and watch more of episode two because I wanted to before we reviewed it. And you were saying to me, "Why you haven't watched it? You haven't watched it? I'm like, well, you haven't watched episode one. It turns out, but I did fathom that. Oh, this is not episode one.
Yes.
And I went back and I watched episode one, I did the same thing,
and then I checked the episodes. I was like, oh yes, they're out of order.
So because the whole setup of him being auditioning for Bond and being seen by paparazzi outside. He deliberately walks outside and gets seen so that everyone knows about it. You missed that whole
shtick. So bemused. I was like, why is he needing all the security? Oh, God. All right, that's going to colour my review.
Yeah, it will. Carry on.
Yes. This is an interesting thing. I mean, it kind of, at the time of the comeback, you know, which we reviewed on Plus.
Which is thematically very similar.
There are a lot of shows over, you know, kind of going back to, I mean, Curb, you know, which we talked about in the when we were reviewing. The comeback and extras, of course, and there's just and going back to the Larry Sanders show. It's kind of comedies set in the world of show business with people either playing themselves or playing characters very adjacent to themselves,
and then the mix of people then playing becoming the cameos
the
of people being there.
Like Patrick Stewart. So Patrick Stewart is in the aforementioned beginning of episode two with the joke that to which James is referring. And so I watched this and I thought, this is Riz Ahmed taking the chance. You know, he's kind of reaching almost the peak of his power in the industry to some extent. You know, he can get stuff commissioned, I think. You know, he's just done a version of Hamlet, for fuck's sake, right? Now, which I thought was quite a decent stab at Hamlet. Something different. That's no pun intended, by the way. And he did a like modernized update of it. And it was, you know, it was a really interesting film. And I just think, you know, he's very popular. You know, he's got a lot of kudos at the moment.
He's got a lot of clout.
Clout.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. That's the word I was desperately grasping
anytime,
for.
Anytime. I might not know what other word. Mellifluous.
Maleficent.
So this is like, for me, this is like his chance to show he's got a sense of humour. Almost, because I love him, but I think he's a brilliant actor. But like, if you think about like Sound of Metal, The Night Of, which he was absolutely fantastic in, one of the great limited series of all time. Hamlet, as I say, he generally takes on pretty heavyweight, big roles. Even when he's doing a big, like he's in Venom, isn't he? Like, you know, he might be playing the villain. He plays a kind of Elon Musk-esque figure. But it's rare to see him doing a comedy. I think it's almost, this is almost unique in his career. Certainly, once he's become this famous of doing a comedy. So it is very much, I think it reflects on him, his real life situation, his background, you know, with his Pakistani family, and all of the family scenes are hilarious. He calls his mum mummy, you know. So on the one hand, he's like dealing with his madcap parents and relatives. The next minute, he's auditioning for Bond, you know, or being interviewed by Sir Patrick Stewart. So I think one of the funny things about it is that contrast all the way through of him trying to maintain this image of someone worthy of playing James Bond, while at the same time having a raucous family who are, you know, and in their community who take the piss out of him constantly, and they're taking the piss out of each other, and aren't really impressed. He won't really be impressed with him until he's actually on screen as James Bond with the gun and the tuxedo and all of that. And even though, so the weird thing is, even though everyone else is doing the funny stuff, like Gus Kahn is in it playing, I think, his cousin.
Yes.
Yeah.
In my family.
And his security.
And they have a lot of great banter, to use that awful word. But it's Gus Kahn who's doing the funny stuff. And so Riz Ahmed's character is kind of the straight man, but this is a comedy and exploiting his skill as a straight man. You still have to have the timing of the good comedic scenes to show that he knows what he's doing, and he really is.
I think it's almost harder to be the straight man in comedy.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's true. That is a good observation. But I really enjoyed it. I just really enjoyed watching him doing this thing. And I think it's really interesting that I was reading that, because this is an MGM Studios production. And of course, Amazon is now owned by MGM and the bigger, whatever the bigger overall parent companies. But the point is, they own James Bond now. So they're making the next James Bond film. So it kind of, he literally had a conversation with Barbara Broccoli, the legendary Bond producer who sold the rights to MGM/Amazon. So it all ties together. So I was watching it, first of all, thinking, this is quite bold for them to be making fun of the James Bond films to some extent, and kind of commenting on the constant speculation that there is, which is absolutely the case. I mean, the number of emails I get from betting people, bookmakers, as they're known, every single week, saying this is the latest betting on who the fuck the new James Bond's going to be. And so, Riz Ahmed really was connected to being the new James Bond at one point, and really did have a meeting about it.
Yeah.
And so it kind of uses that knowledge and that whole idea of the madness surrounding this character and the casting of that character to good comedic effect. I think my one criticism would be, I think, for an out-and-out, it is an out-and-out comedy, and there's kind of like a kind of B-plot thriller element to it that Gus Kahn's character is particularly involved in, which is fine. Weren't quite enough jokes, and not so much jokes, there weren't quite enough funny moments for me. I think it needed a little bit of a ratcheting up when it came to the comedy. So I really enjoyed him making fun of himself and him making fun of his family and the whole world of James Bond and all of that, and the whole showbiz frenzy surrounding James Bond. But I think, having watched two episodes, including the one that begins with the Patrick Stewart bit, I needed a bit more of the Patrick Stewart joke and less of the, I could have done with less of the action-y stuff that gets a bit embroiled in to some extent.
That's interesting. But what's also interesting is, like, you are right, Riz Ahmed is not known for comedy. But lest we know, I certainly first know Riz Ahmed from Chris Morris's Four Lions. And I think that's probably the only other comedic thing he's done, because he's a master of incredibly deadpan comedy.
Yeah.
He's hilarious in Four Lions, and he's hilarious in this as well. Obviously, I'm not the comedy guy, you'll be shocked to hear. I thought it was so funny. This was properly funny for me. I really like that very dry, deadpan sense of humour, though. So it really tickled me. And the conversations he has with his family just absolutely destroyed me.
Yeah, they're the best bits.
So funny. Now, there is quite a lot of cringe in here as well.
Yes.
But I didn't find it too excruciating. So I struggled through the cringe stuff. I really liked it. I had a really good time with this. I want to watch all of it. I mean, it's only 6 half-hour episodes, 25-minute episodes. They all drop at once as well. So you can probably binge it in one session. But yeah, loads of fun.
Colour me shocked.
There you go. Oh, I liked a comedy.
Okay, well.
Mark the time and date.
Of all the comedies, I'm shocked, because there is an incredibly cringy bit in episode 2, which is the episode I started with.
It turns out episode 2.
And I would have said that was like your idea of hell.
Yeah, there are certainly moments where I struggled, but I found it sufficiently very funny. Yeah. I mean, there's a bit in the first episode where he, not to spoil anything, where he has his mic on where he doesn't realise, which is toe-curlingly excruciating. Yeah. And they milk
and it's
an old-school
joke.
It is an old-school joke, but that scene goes on so long to let you just marinate in the awkwardness, which I thought was smart. But despite all that, it's very funny.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is going to be hugely popular. I think I, as I've said before, I come from Luton.
I come from Luton.
I say it because I live in a hugely multicultural area and I know lots of Riz Ahmeds and I know lots and lots of Guz Khans. And the moments that I enjoyed about it is because... there's a lot of multi-generational living and it's Eid at the moment. And every night I'm getting a knock on the door and people's mums are making food and dropping them off because there's all these, and that's the stuff that I really enjoyed because I really related to it because I know lots of those families that they, you know, they live in these big houses and, you know, they've got their great grandparents and their grandparents and it's a, you know, a wonderful way to live. You never need childcare because everyone's there and there's someone's always home to look after someone. And these people are just making food all the time for us. So it's great. Okay. And I love the stuff in that house. I thought all those observations were really, really lovely. It didn't have enough of Guz for me. I agree with you. I think it didn't have enough jokes because those were so good. And when I watched the trailer, it put all those really good jokes already in the trailer. So I was sort of waiting for more.
I hadn't seen the trailer.
But yeah, Riz, for me, Riz is just, the night of is so perfect for me. That's his role for me, and I don't want to say he can't do, because obviously he's proven he can do all these other roles. I like my Riz in the night of. That's my preferred Riz. He is very, it is hard, as I said, to play the straight man in a comedy. I didn't really love it. It was enjoyable, but it wasn't, I don't feel compelled to watch any more of it. Which is strange for me, considering you really liked it.
I'm now comedy champion on the podcast.
Yeah, no, I liked it, but I don't know. I don't think, but I do think it will, I think it will be really popular. But maybe it's because I started with episode two.
Yeah, I mean, that probably didn't help, Steph.
Yeah. Maybe I wasn't there for the initial...
I will watch the rest of it for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe, should I watch episode one?
Yes. Episode one.
I'll watch episode one, or as it's known on my screener list, the finale.
Yes.
yeah.
Thanks, Amazon.
Rafe Spall is really funny in it.
Mention Rafe Spall. Yes. Rafe Spall.
Yes.
Now, Rafe Spall was an actor for me who I can take Rafe Spall in Under Salt Marsh.
Yeah.
10-10-10-10. And I can take him in comedy. 10-10-10.
Yeah.
Like,
he's so good at comedy.
I don't have a preferred Rafe, but there's some actors I do have a
He's funny in everything.
He's so versatile. Can you remember him in The English, where he's just horrifying?
Yeah, yeah.
And then in Hot Fuzz, where he's genuinely properly hilarious.
Yeah.
He's a great actor. I love him.
Yeah. And I'm not saying Riz is not versatile. It's just, that's a very personal opinion of that's how I like my Riz. So it kind of maybe was a little... You know, maybe that took away from my enjoyment.
Maybe it did.
So, but he's very handsome in the face. And probably the rest of him, I don't know. I haven't seen.
Handsome in the face.
Yeah, handsome in the face, isn't he? He's very watchable.
As opposed to handsome in the back?
Yeah.
Well, at least we're not back on bottoms.
It's only a matter of time.
Some people do have very handsome backs, you know, I'm just saying. Anyway, yes.
Anyway, you can see Riz Ahmed's front and back when Bait drops in its entirety on Prime Video on the 25th of March, which is what day of the week, buddy?
It's a Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's a funny day to drop.
Steph does not approve.
I think it's very common day to drop nowadays. I think most Disney originals arrive on a Wednesday and Prime Video quite often arrives.
What do
on
I
Wednesday.
Know?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Well,
next up, we have Yo Nesbitt. And yes, I looked it up. That's how you pronounce it. It's Yo Nesbitt.
Yo Nesbitt, well done.
Yes,
well
Yo Nesbitt's Detective Hula.
Yes, well
because
done.
It's not
you.
Joe Nesbitt's Detective Hole.
That's what I've been calling it and probably what I will continue to call it.
Yes, Yo Nesbitt's Detective Hula on Netflix, which adapts the very popular Norwegian detective novel, specifically The Devil's Star, which is what this first season is based on. And it sees a tormented, maverick, alcoholic detective with authority issues, stop me if you've heard this one, on the hunt for a serial killer on the streets of Oslo. Steph.
No.
You are our resident crime expert.
No.
So I think you need
just
to tell us whether this is a no Nesbitt or a Hula in one.
I thought you were going to make me do the things. And last week, if you didn't listen to last week when James made me do all of the introductions.
It was International Women's Day.
And it was awful. Right, okay. I'm just going to tell you what I think of this.
I mean, that is traditionally how reviews work, yes.
Radical.
I'm going to break with tradition and tell you why.
Did you watch episode two first?
Yeah. Did you pick a random episode and just start there?
No, I started at the beginning. Now, okay. I'm going to set out my stall here in that... Don't judge me. I don't massively get on with shows that you can read.
Oh, you're a subtitle fascist.
No, I'm not. I don't. So It detracts my enjoyment. I find it quite, I'm not a double screener. So watching and reading at the same time, I find it quite difficult.
Well, I would have thought if you're not a double screener, because the point is with it, you can't double screen when you, because you can't take your eyes off the screen.
You still have to look at the action and read the words.
And I think the reason for that is that the subtitles are too low in the frame, whereas, of course, if you watch Shogun, the subtitles are gloriously high in the frame, and that makes it all a lot easier. Yes, this is me on the Shogun subtitles again. You'd have been particularly hard done by this one, though, Steph, because, unusually for Netflix, there wasn't an English dub track at all.
I don't go in for that.
No, but I always like to put them on and listen to them briefly just to see how terrible they are. And there just wasn't one for this, which is unusual. That was unexpected.
Well, what I'm going
to say, I bet there
now,
will be when it comes out.
Maybe. Well, there wasn't when we watched. Yeah.
Okay, in this week's Joel Kinnaman show, because obviously, as we've said, he's in absolutely everything, and he plays Tom, Tom Voller.
Sure.
And he is I don't know if I can say
detective.
This. Yeah, but he's a type of detective.
A bellend.
Yes. Okay.
You can say that, it's fine.
I have not enjoyed a show this much for a very, very long time. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
Despite having to read it.
Right, and I tell you now, it's absolutely broken that, because I was like, this is fucking brilliant. I loved it. You know when we did The Capture the other day?
Yeah.
And it had that momentum, and it was thrilling to watch. And I said, I haven't seen anything this good for ages.
Yeah, so you haven't seen anything this good since the week ago when we were doing
it. which is crazy, because you know something's really impactful, and usually that's kind of once every 3 months you see something, you go, this is really amazing. This is so, it starts with a bang. And I suppose it's because it surprised me, because I was like, oh God, I'm not very good at stuff when you have to read it. Sometimes it takes away from my enjoyment. It's unbelievable. It starts with a bang. There's a car crash. Then it does that device that I don't know whether you like it or you don't like it, where it kind of does the
It's just everything does it. So yeah. I'm a critic of the tiredness of it, but sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It was inevitable that this would go down that road. Got the robbery, the bank. No, you get the car crash chase thing, which is stunning, and then you get the robbery, which is even more stunning. Double whammy of an action,
super graphic as well.
Very graphic,
stunning,
very violent.
Everything and unexpected. And in the same way, you know, when we had The Capture, not just keep comparing this to Capture, we were like, and I felt like every scene felt like it could be a finale. So many things happened in this. I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? Everything, and that level of pacing. And I don't know why that particularly was, if it's some kind of new device that every other scene feels like it could be the end of something. It was just, it was so, I was completely gripped. I was on the edge of my seat. The twists in it are things I didn't see coming, but then I haven't read Yo Nespo's books. I have no notes of this. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I watched three of them, and I endear you to watch as many as you can immediately.
I mean, it's no The Capture, but it's...
hold on a minute. Say it's not The Capture, it isn't The Capture, because it's a completely different type of thing. But I'm talking about in terms of pacing and thrills.
No, you're using it as the ultimate compliment, but I still don't think it's as good as The Capture.
Go on.
I was going to say, did either of you watch 2017's The Snowman?
Yes.
Which is Michael Fassbender as terrible. Harry Hawler.
Famously terrible.
Terrible adaptation of Yo Nespo's novels.
Okay.
Yes.
Right, and that's not good.
Bad, bad, bad. Well, apparently part of the reason they did this was to kind of put right what once went wrong. It was to kind of address that huge injustice, because Yo Nespo was massive and that film was horrendous.
Right.
So that's why this exists.
Yeah. I think for me, the reason the other is because it was an unexpected joy to me, because I didn't expect to like it. Even though
because of the words on the screen.
Well, I know that sounds really ridiculous, but just it really does. And I'm just going to say, I can't be the only one. Sometimes it's really hard to get into something when you're constantly having to look down. And as you say, it is a good point. Those subtitles in white down the bottom.
They are too low.
I'm elderly now. It's hard
take
to
leave out of show. You're elderly. Just saying.
God, what about me?
Well, listen, honey.
Oh, eye strain, everything. there have been other adaptations of. Nunes' books, haven't they, I think?
They may well have done. Yeah. I'm only familiar with The Snowman.
I think there's another film on the way as well. But
sorry, Boyd, what did you think, though? You didn't think it was as good as The Capture? Go on.
To tell you now. It was... I know what you mean. It's definitely like fast, frenetically paced, had a double whammy of an opening, because as you say, you get the car crash car crash thing, which is brilliantly done and graphic. And then you get this robbery situation, which is brilliantly done and graphic. And then the story kicks in and there's the conflict within the police force with Charles Joe Nordstrom Kinnaman's character. Yes, that's his full name. And he is actually Swedish and can actually speak Swedish
dialogue,
because we're so used to seeing him in For All Mankind, aging. Currently in For All Mankind, he's playing like a 95-year-old or something.
He is, yeah.
With the worst aging makeup
genuinely
in history.
True, yeah. Although we should say a lot of his dialogue in this is Swedish, because his character is Swedish, whereas everyone else is speaking Norwegian. Because it helpfully points out when the dialogue is in Swedish.
Yeah. And it touches on that Norwegian-Swedish divide, which was in the Bridge. Was it the Bridge?
Bruin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had a lot about that. Do you remember that? It was like, there was a death was found.
Yeah, yeah, like the tunnel. It was
the first one. You had Bruin, and then you had the Bridge, and then the UK France one was the tunnel.
Yeah, that's right. There were so many versions of that.
Yes, a lot of bridges. A lot of bridges.
Do you know what they've done now? Is that they've just got rid of the like definite article, the, and now everything's just got the one word.
Bridge,
so now
it
would just be called Bridge.
Yes.
Anyway, carry on.
It should really just be called Hole.
Yeah.
Hurla.
It's definitely like full pelt, and it's got lavish production values. It's quite strikingly shot. It's quite kind of bright and colourfully lit but what happens is, at the end of episode one, they kind of introduce the kind of serial killer element to it, because there's two things going on, aren't there? There's the kind of internal conflict within the police storyline, and then there's a separate kind of serial killer storyline that kicks in at the end of episode one, and that's visually is going to be, as all things are involving serial killers, it will look like Seven, and I can tell
already. Well, I was going to say, this had a very Fincher-esque filter all the way through it, which I think made it look incredibly cinematic.
It did look very cinematic. Yeah, more cinematic than a lot of Netflix shows. There's this whole theory that still is propagated online, by the way, that Netflix it's just bullshit. It's just not true. Not all Netflix films look, but this definitely looked, it definitely had a heightened cinematic feel, as you say. So they really went hell for leather. And I feel like almost like they were, I'm imagining like the notes from Netflix or whoever. I mean, this is complete speculation. I have no idea. But like, oh, please God, start it with a big action thing and then do another action thing and then have another scene that's incredibly exciting and tense, because the relentlessness of that does come across. There's a whole bit in the middle, though, right? This is, I have some qualms, more than, certainly you didn't have any, literally
no,
you had
I,
no
I,
notes.
I
have a few notes.
I was fully drawn in.
There's a whole bit in the middle where he's bonding with the kid of his new lover, effectively, Hurla, right? And he takes him to this swimming pool. Break into this swimming pool, basically, so the kid can confront his fear about diving from, by the way, diving into a pool from about like 50 feet. I mean, it's not a fear. It's not an irrational fear. Any normal person would be fucking terrified.
It's quite high up.
And this whole sequence, which goes on quite a long time, and the way it's shot, you kind of half expect the kid to die or something. Did you get this sense?
That was an incredibly necessary scene, because what was happening simultaneously at the time.
It's intercut with another thing happening.
Yeah, and the thing is, the whole point of that scene is it's really and truly the first time he is letting himself do something aside from work. So it's kind of crucial.
It is. I just thought it was. I don't know. I just felt it was slightly forced, and I actually felt that I don't necessarily need. They could have had the device of him not picking up his phone to his colleague, which is, I'm trying not to spoil it, without that whole sequence. I don't know. It just felt. I felt there were moments in it where there were sequences that I didn't need to see. Weirdly, even though it was incredibly pacey and hectic and fast moving, and yet there were still moments I was like, I'm not sure this feels like, you know, a 10-part show that I'm not sure needs that bit.
That bit was like
analogous to him calming his mind. You know what I mean? He was like, his mind was calm. He'd sort of given himself permission to, you know, he's a recovering alcoholic. He'd given himself permission to sit, see how he sits in another world. And actually that slow pace of it was...
Sure, I get it. I get why it's there. I just...
You just don't want it there.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But also the bigger picture for me is that I can't love it quite as much as you. I feel like essentially his character, and this is no fault of the show, because obviously this is a hugely popular character, it just feels now, in this, it feels like a cliche now.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest issue with it.
I agree with you.
So all of his the drinking and the 12 steps and his dialogue with his shrink.
And he's abrasive in a kind of Sarah Lund kind of way. Exactly. It's like, is he on the spectrum?
Yeah. But
he's
and by the way, he has almost like Sherlock-style mind palace thing going on.
Yeah.
Another character has special powers somehow to be able to see people's faces or whatever.
Well, she's got like an eidetic memory, hasn't she?
Yeah, that's the phrase. She's got an eidetic memory. Put that in your mellifluous pipe.
Look at her, she's glaring at me.
With the word.
So it just comes across as all a bit cliched, almost through no fault of its own. It's just like if they got around to this to making this series 20 years ago, I probably wouldn't have seen so many lead detective characters like this. But he is a lead. He's a maverick who breaks the rules.
Yeah.
Who drinks
with a troubled past,
lots of
trauma,
and lots of trauma, and blah blah blah. We've seen this dozens of times before.
So you're raging against a formula that's proven to work.
Well,
and be enjoyable entertainment.
I fully admit I did enjoy it, absolutely. Okay. But I think that I don't think I'll ever be able to have quite the level of love you've got for it.
Oh, I love
because it's just is all a bit. We've seen it all before.
Funnily enough, this was exactly how I felt about it. Like I was watching it and I was like, but this is what I was conflicted because I'm watching this. I'm like, I did a sense check. So I'm like, on paper, like this is just awash with cliche. Like this character could not be more of a cookie cutter, like movie/TV detective. Like with his trauma and all of this, this partner's trying to rein him, but you know, he's a maverick and he can't be trusted. All of this sort of stuff. Plus, there is not a single thing that happened in that first episode that surprised me. Nothing. Like I predicted exactly where it would go. I thought it was very, to be fair, it's the first episode. And I knew exactly where it was going to go. I knew exactly what was going to happen. And I even knew the stupid ways in which the characters were going to react, which would annoy me. But despite all of that, I was so engaged with this.
Oh.
So engaged with it.
You brought it back.
No, genuinely, because I thought the acting was fantastic. Mm. It's very violent, but it has real impact in the way. It's incredibly cinematic. It really is beautifully shot. It's really well acted. Joel Kinnaman is great in it as well. Really, really enjoyed it. And it feels like it really has a grip on the material. It should do. Yo Nesbitt's literally the showrunner. So like, you know, all over this shit, essentially. To the same point that Tobias Santelman, who plays Hurler in this, is 6'3", which is the exact height of the character in the book. So attention to detail, it matters.
Nerdy.
Exactly. But I thought it was really powerful. Even though nothing surprised me, I do think that's the first episode. And I think, as Boydy mentioned, the whole thrust of this devil star, this serial killer thing, it only really ramps up at the very end of this episode. And I suspect it will be very surprising as it goes forward. But I guess my point is that even though the character is cliched, and even though there were no surprises for me in the first episode, I thought this was an absolutely kind of like tense, gripping, brilliant hour of television, and I absolutely loved it. So I thought it was fantastic. Although, fuck me, those subtitles need to be higher in the screen because I was getting eye strain constantly doing this.
Up and down. But the thing is, I totally agree with everything you're saying. Obviously, you're my new favourite for everything you said. But yeah, that's the thing, and that's why that was my reservation about it. But it overcame that because it is so captivating. Yeah.
I really liked it as well.
But it's like you're saying I really like it, but with the voice that says you don't.
The thing with Steph is either all in or all out. There is no middle ground.
I agree. I'm on the same. In the same vein as James, it's full of cliches, it's full of stereotypes. Again, nothing surprised me either about the first episode. And in fact, even to the point when the serial killer kind of imagery kicks in, you think, oh my God, this is not only Seven, it's like Messiah, it's Luther, this serial killer has been done millions of times before. It's incredibly unoriginal, but it doesn't matter because it's still incredibly entertaining and engaging and enjoyable.
Right.
And I will definitely find time to watch it. And by the way, this is going to be a gigantic hit.
Without a doubt.
Right, and I've come back to what I always say, and no offence to either of you, in a world where we are telling people what to do and watch with their time, where they're going to be entertained, this hits the mark.
It does. Yeah, without a doubt. And it's being released in like 130 countries or something.
Quantries.
Like, quantries. 130 countries.
Well, it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I mean, it's going to be a global hit.
Even like the worst thing on Netflix gets shown 140 countries.
I'm with you, James.
But what I'm saying is it's going to be number one of that fucking Netflix chart.
In 130 countries.
In 130 countries.
Where it's being released.
140
Oh,
incredible. Yeah, no, it's going to be gigantic.
Oh, Yo Nesbitt, Detective Hula, then, which lands on Netflix, when, Boydie?
Oh, God, you know what?
Oh, Jesus. Give it a rustle.
It's going to have to be a rustle. Thursday, the 26th of March, 2026.
Okay. Fabulous. A day before the BTS documentary on Netflix.
Indeed.
Which is the crux of news, remember?
Finally this week, and I do mean finally, although, frankly, none of us are probably strangers to having to wait around when it comes to hospitals, but finally, The Pitt lands on these shores. Hooray! With the launch of HBO Max. Good God, it's been a long way. And it's a bit of a landslide of episodes, too, because we don't just get all 15 glorious hours of season one. We also get the start of season two as well, so it's kind of like a pit storm, which I'm very, very excited about. Now, both Boyd and I have banged on about this show at length in the past, so, and it's excellent, spoiler. Steph, we should probably hear from you because you have not spoken about The Pitt before. So how much of The Pitt have you watched and what did you think?
Right, okay, I'm just going to say this. I think one of the major problems I have is that you two have banged on relentlessly about Pitt. We've had on-air moans about you not having The Pitt. This one's watched this many, this one's watched this many. And you both were so enthused with it, saying it was the most amazing thing ever, right? That you kind of ruined it for me.
Oh,
you
God.
Kind
Sorry,
of ruined
Steph.
It for me because obviously it's fantastic. Is it fantastic yet? Is Noah Wiley... Is
Wiley,
it Wiley?
Wiley?
Do you know Wiley? Incredible. Is everybody in it? Are all their stories, are all their character arcs really fascinating? Yes. Is the way it's set every hour wonderful? Everything about it is brilliant and people will love it. And of course it's really enjoyable. Do you want to watch the whole thing in one sitting? Yes, you do. Question, right? Why do you think this is so much more special than any other hospital drama of recent times? And that is a genuine question because I watched it and I tell you what, I don't know whether either of you guys watched New Amsterdam?
Yes.
I watched the first episode.
I'm a massive New Amsterdam fan, right?
No, you're the one, are you?
No, I really enjoyed that. I love Max Goodwin. He's a great doctor. I really like that. You know, five seasons.
Doctor. That's what you want. Seasons, it's a great bedside manner.
I was fine. But you know, it had Freema in it. It was good. ER, Grey's. And I'm going to say, there's a thing.
Casualty.
Is, yeah, but no, but the thing is, all right.
Holby.
Okay. If you're saying that the greatest thing about this is the you know, the device of it's every hour.
It's real time. Yeah,
it's like real
24.
Time. Okay. Yeah, that's nice. Are you saying
that's
that
nice.
It's the, but are you saying that it's the graphic nature of the injuries and things that you see? Is it that? Because I'm going to challenge you and say, while I really enjoyed this and it absolutely does deserve all the plaudits it's getting, I also really enjoy a 24 hours in A&E, right?
Yeah.
So I just...
It uses, but by the way...
I wasn't sure, and I was like, what am I missing here? So I watched five episodes. What am I missing that these guys are seeing? Or maybe they don't watch as many hospital dramas as I do, because...
I love a hospital drama.
So Grey's has all the emotional narrative of the characters and doctors. ER had that, you know... To hold it. New Amsterdam
House,
had it.
House,
that,
you and let,
that
out the best.
Is what I was going to say. Sorry, you've stolen my point. House.
Yeah.
This is not, for me, better than House.
Well, it is up there for me. And that's the
but
ultimate.
It is,
House, one
no,
of my favourite
I'm
shows
not,
of all time.
Yeah, me too. I'm right. not taken away from
Here's
it.
Here's why. The answer to
please,
your question.
Please do.
It's everything. It's
okay.
everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, well... It takes stuff from House. I think there is a big influence there, particularly from House in the way because
in
the
Noah's
diagnosis.
Character.
Well, in Noah's character, but also there's diagnosis is a big thing. You know, there's a lot of all of these patients are coming into the ER and they've all got their various different ailments, and a lot of it is to do with the doctors trying to ascertain what is going on with them. Some of them, you know, they get it wrong. It's they think it's one thing and it's another. So it's got that Housean element to it, the mystery mm-hmm. element of it, and. But it's also got the real-time thing works brilliantly in
yes.
terms of ramming home the realism of it. You just feel you're observing stuff you don't get to see. And it's all so authentic to the point where, you know, the Empire did a feature, an on-set feature for season two. And what's his name? The writer? I met him Al Horner. We hung out with him in LA and he was telling me that he went on set. So he went on this incredible set, which is all built to, it's literally like a functioning actual hospital floor, the ER of to the extent where in the drawers there are real, you know, yeah. things to inject people with
syringes.
Syringes.
Things to inject people with.
It's all unbelievable. And literally, the cars can move around, the cameras can move around as if they were filming 24 hours in A&E.
Yes.
And they talk, the program makers have talked about how it's more of an influence of the of the kind of fixed rig camera shows like that, and their American equivalents of them as well, reality shows or documentaries set in a medical setting, in a hospital setting. That has a huge influence on the show, as much as ER or all these other shows that you mentioned were. So it's got incredible level of realism. People have, by the way, if you go online, people will pick at the accuracy of certain things, but you have to, it is a drama, it's not a documentary.
Yes.
So anyway, so you've got the incredibly realistic, authentic nature of it, helped by the one setting is all within this one setting. It never goes out of it, which again is pretty unique compared to all the other shows you mentioned. So you don't get a kind of like outside the workplace.
You don't get domestic.
No, there's none of that.
No.
And yet they brilliantly weave in the domestic lives of all the main characters. And they're all interlinked. They've all got issues. You know, he's got issues with grief regarding someone dying during COVID, which, and I made this point when I discussed it before, after I watched the whole thing on the plane, on the Virgin flight, is that my one complaint was I didn't like the flashback. The flashbacks are done in like a hazy, soft focus effect. It's like he's having flashbacks to a previous trauma and grief. We don't need that really took it out of me, because the whole thing is so brilliantly handled, apart from that, I think. But that's a little niggling point.
No, I'd agree with you on that. It does take you out of it.
So you've got the real-time thing, which works brilliantly. You've got the one setting thing, which works brilliantly. You've got the private lives and the pub and professional lives woven in spectacularly, because there are interconnections between the different characters. And then you get, it's not only content with having all of the different patients coming in, who are all just, there are little character studies of these things. You know these patients within about 30 seconds of you meeting them, and they're all incredibly, brilliantly well done. The writing on this is genius in that way, and that not just the dialogue, it feels incredibly real, and with all the jargon they'll have to memorize, but also the way they manage to make characters out of the myriad people arriving in the ER as we're watching it playing out in real time. And there's one story that I won't spoil with the young guy, the teenager, and the mother.
That is extraordinary. It's so brilliantly done. Yeah.
And that's almost like, that could have been a drama on its own.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
And there are loads of examples of that. There's little subplots, ABC plots, side stories. They're all so compelling and gripping and expertly handled and brilliantly acted. But the cast is just fucking incredible. I love the charge nurse who's in charge of, like, she's like an angel. I mean, that word is used for obviously nurses. Nurses are literally called angels, quite rightly. But she is such a force for good. And you're like rooting, and she's just so calm amidst the madness. Mm. And it depicts the madness of the whole situation, the hectic, relentless nightmare that is being in an ER. And he has to deal with the boss. His boss comes down, and the people have said that's inaccurate, but I still think that could happen. So he has political arguments about the funding of the hospital.
And patient care scores.
Patient care scores and all of that. The political pressure he's under. There's hardly... Now, my other second criticism, which was... I'm trying not to bang on about it too much because we're already running out of time, is that... It doesn't deal with the hideous, nightmarish reality much of the American system where all about you've got to pay for your fucking care.
It does, but more in season two.
I was going to say that.
Sorry, Boydy, carry on.
And yeah, it does in season two, which is brilliant. So it's like my one thing complaint about season one, once you get into season two, it does do that. And season two is, by the way, the four episodes I've watched, even more incredibly brilliant than season one. So it's got everything. So it's got elements of all the shows you mentioned, done to the peak of its powers. I think it is that good.
So the what you think is so special about it is that it's basically an amalgamation of everything that's brilliant about all these other shows. Okay, and I'm just saying, of course it's brilliant. And yeah, I loved it. And had you never spoken about it, I probably would have said this is absolutely unbelievable. And I do think it's amazing. Of course I'm going to watch all of it. I did have a problem with that, having lived in America and having had to deal with that medical system, that insurance system, which is nightmarish. I thought that was severely lacking.
It was surprising,
when they do the waiting room scenes and you don't ever see any of that, and there's certain people come in and the insurance is never questioned, which actually, if you ever go into an American hospital, it's the first thing. They do not treat you. You know,
I read an interview with one of the showrunners who said that the reason they didn't do it
is stunting.
They thought it would detract from the storytelling, and they didn't want to make an overt political dismiss
the political part, but also the fact that you mentioned the real-time aspect means it, this has a propulsiveness to it that, you know, only real-time shows really can do it that way. Like 24 had it, but this does it much better because 24 used to skip all over the place and there'd be moments with a cougar or you're hanging out with Jack Bauer's wife because he has to get from A to B and so they need to find some shit to spin the wheels while that's happening. Because this is so concentrated, there's no filler at all. It is so propulsive and, you know, you can't sit in like in chairs and like fill out forms for 20 minutes. I don't think that would make for great television. So I think that's a large part of it. But the character work in this is so good. One thing that you, I mean, I know you've seen five episodes and just to take a, you know, to take a Steph line in this, I really don't think you can judge it from five episodes, Steph.
No, and I take that on board.
It's 15 episodes long. I would say once it gets to, I don't know exactly when it is, it's coming up towards episode 10, this show shifts into high gear in a way I have rarely seen before. And from then on, it is fucking pedal to the metal to the finish line. You're like, oh my God, I didn't know it could get any more tense.
Oh, and don't get me wrong. I watched this and I was like, I've got to watch the next one. And I absolutely have. I was just interested
to
see. Because, yes, I totally agree, it is wonderful. And if I had the time, I absolutely would have wanted to watch this in one sitting. But I don't get luxury flights on, to Apple places.
They're showing in economy as well as,
so please don't get me wrong. I was just interested because you guys had been so, so enthused by it.
Yeah,
I was interested why it seemed to differ from any enthusiasm that I feel that you might have had about any other hospital drama. That's what I wanted to know.
It's not even the point. My point isn't even that it's taking all those elements from different hospital dramas and doing them better, which it does do. It does everything better than most previous hospital dramas.
Yeah, okay.
It's just in and of itself an incredible piece of work.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened in America. It took people by surprise. Right, it became a massive, massive phenomenon, pop culture phenomenon, just because even the most hardened critic expecting a genre piece, a medical drama, of which we've seen, as you listed them all, and I mentioned, it is just an incredible piece of work.
Because did it come out roughly the same time as Pulse on Netflix last year,
yes,
which was almost exactly the same type of thing?
That's a brilliant point, to be fair, because the contrast could not be greater. That show was just one cliche after another.
Right.
It was badly dumb.
Cancelled.
Everything about this is peak. This is HBO taking a genre, the medical drama, and just delivering the Rolls Royce of that drama. But the way it deploys the students, right?
I know it
seems like it's so clever.
No, because the character work is unsurpassed. I completely agree with you. I was honestly just interested. I think one of the best points you made is that it's rare that you get a show where you kind of immediately understand characters' backgrounds without them spoon-feeding you their background, and you understand their motivations without it, and that is all in the dialogue. And I care about every single one of them. I even care about that really annoying doctor, the student doctor who just wants to do everything. I care about her.
Amazing.
Dr. Girardi.
She's fantastic. So annoying, but I really care about her.
And it's
very rare to get a full raft of characters who you, even kind of two episodes in, you understand them, you understand the motivations, and that is incredibly watchable and is incredibly clever, and it's all down to the writing. But I was just very interested to see, and you have explained it to me, and I will never ask you again.
And our listeners will thank you for that. Fantastic. Well, let's see what else is out this week that we've missed.
So just to say, The Pit is on HBO Max, which launches on Thursday the 26th
of March. That's important information. Thank you, Boydie.
The whole of season one is available as soon as it starts.
And how many of season two?
I think it's all week by week, so I think it's just one.
I think it's like 10 or so of season two of Air in the States.
But still, I think they're just showing it week by week rather than...
That would frustrate me.
It is frustrating.
That would frustrate me.
Don't get me wrong, it's frustrating. We reviewed The Comeback, which is on Sky Comedy and Now on Monday, Monday evening, but it's also on HBO Max when it launches on the
Just
Thursday.
To be confusing, we did review that on Pilot Plus. We also reviewed Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man. So if you want to subscribe to Pilot Plus, please do so.
There's a one-off drama about Hugh Edwards, Power, The Downfall of Hugh Edwards. This is Martin Clunes as Hugh Edwards. Incredible piece of casting, fresh from his absolute triumph in Wuthering Heights. I haven't watched it yet. I'm fascinated to see that, actually.
Have you seen the pictures?
I've seen the pictures, yeah. It's interesting. For All Mankind starts on Friday.
It does.
It's back. James has seen it all already.
Except for the last two episodes.
On Apple TV, Friday the 27th. Saturday Night Live will have just started, and we can say Tina Fey hosted it. We'll all have gone out, but I'm really interested to see as we speak now how that works, if it works.
How that particular car crash unfolded.
Steady. Judging.
I haven't seen it.
So you cannot
I'm just
say
guessing.
Anything.
Say. I'm just guessing.
It's a busy week. Something very bad is going to happen, which is the horror drama on Netflix from Thursday the 26th. You know, there's 10 episodes in that. I read the premise. The premise feels like it's barely going to sustain a 90-minute film. I don't know how they're going to spin this out for 10 episodes.
Well, we'll see and find out.
They do. Daredevil Born Again.
Yes,
Disney
Wednesday.
Plus, Wednesday, the 25th of March. Beyond Paradise in the Death in Paradise universe is back on Friday the 27th with what's-his-name in it, Chris Marshall. Well, do you know what? HBO Max just has tons of stuff, so you're just going to have to...
Everything on HBO
everything
Max.
On HBO Max. I think that might be it in my list anyway.
It's honestly my favourite part of the podcast when Boyd does his surprise of, oh my God, this is out as well.
Yes, I don't know what we're going to cover on this week's Pilot Plus yet, but it'll be one of these things.
Yes.
And it will be delightful. What is our pick of the week? And I have to say, it's a hell of a week.
Yeah.
It is a big week, yeah. It's The Pit, though.
I'm going to say Yo Nesbo.
You stick with your Nesbo.
I'm going to stick with my hole. It's fabulous.
Harry Hole.
Yes.
I'd say watch all three. All three shows this week you must watch.
Chickening out.
Yeah. Comedy Advocate.
But The Pit is
James.
The best. But The Pit is obviously the best. But it just feels boring. Because
hold on. Yo Nesbo is such a different proposition though. Just, isn't it?
Yeah, it's still not as good as The Pit.
Oh, okay. All right.
That is it for this week's show. We hope you enjoyed it. Please do leave us a review if you haven't already. And if you have, make sure it's 5 stars. And if it wasn't 5 stars, make it 5 stars, please. Please follow us on social media at Boyd Hilton, at Steph Seelan, at James C. Dyer, at Pilot TV Pod. We will be back next week when other things are out, including, but not restricted to, Star Wars Maul Shadow Lord, which I'm sure Kay would enjoy if we did that. And Your Friends and Neighbours comes next week as well, which is very exciting. And Unchosen comes to Netflix. So, some of those,
none of those.
See. It's hard to say. Mm. Right, that is it. So it's a goodbye from Boyd Hilton.
Hello, goodbye.
And it's a goodbye from the mellifluous Steph Seelan.
Goodbye.
Pilot out.